Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy.
Hello and welcome to my channel, Vice Rhino here. Today, I'm looking at a video on Capturing Christianity's channel, which purports to deal with the problem of divine hiddenness. If you're unfamiliar with divine hiddenness, it's essentially just the fact that God behaves as though he doesn't exist. And the most parsimonious explanation for that fact is that he just doesn't exist. On a completely unrelated linguistic note, every time I use the word parsimonious in this way, I get a handful of comments from people for whom the word parsimonious would normally be used to describe someone who's being cheap or stingy. I have never heard it used that way before, and am familiar with it being used, well, like I'm using it, as a way to say, essentially, that something is the best explanation according to the principle of Occam's razor. And in fact, some people refer to Occam's razor as the law or principle of parsimony. I can definitely see how they are linguistically related. The explanation that fits the best with Occam's razor is the one that is the most stingy with the assumptions. But I'm curious if this is a regional thing or if I'm just a fluke or something. So if you were already familiar with the word parsimonious before I went on this tangent, sound off in the comments as to how you would typically use it and whereabouts you live. Anyway, let's get on to the video.
Sometimes it seems like God is hiding from us. Believers often lack a sense of guidance from God when it comes to important decisions, don't get what they request from God, and lack a sense of God's presence in difficult times.
Yes, and combine that with the fact that there are reasonable physiological explanations for these phenomena that are usually taken to be a sense of guidance from God or a sense of God's presence, and that such experiences take place across multiple cultures and religions, it seems like the best explanation for both the presence of such experiences at some times and the absence of them in other times is that they are grounded in the brain, not in a god. Now, being grounded in a brain, they could very easily mimic what pastors say about feeling the presence of God from the pulpit all the time. If you're feeling guilty about a particular sin that is against your religion, then you're less likely to be able to get into the headspace required to have such experiences. Unless, of course, you go through the mental exercise of giving it up to God. And if there's something big or stressful going on in your life, that could stop you from reaching that headspace altogether no matter what you do or how hard you try. Or maybe you just weren't in that kind of mood that day. The list goes on. Literally anything that could affect your mental state can also affect your mental state. It's not rocket science, it's brain science, which is actually more complicated than rocket science, I think.
Some non-believers think the so-called argument from divine hiddenness is strong evidence against God's existence.
Well, specifically against the existence of a God that intervenes. If you want to believe that God is just, you know, sitting up there in his tower not doing anything in our world, then the fact that he doesn't manifest in our world is the expected outcome. But as long as you claim that the God that exists wants to have a personal relationship with everybody, then the fact that he doesn't pop in and say hi to the vast majority of people that he supposedly wants a relationship with is excellent evidence against his existence.
They say God isn't more present because, well, God doesn't exist.
Yep. God not doing anything is exactly what is expected of a non-existent God.
Even if hiddenness doesn't cause us to doubt God's existence, it can still leave us confused and hurt.
Yeah. Talk to pretty much anyone who has gone through a deconversion from being an all-in born-again Christian to being an atheist, and they'll probably tell you that they went through a period where they were desperately begging God to reveal himself to them or give them anything to confirm his presence, and even the smallest hint of his presence would have been enough. But he failed to manifest in any way. I remember that phase. It's not a fun place to be.
What should we say about this problem? It may be helpful to realize that hiddenness isn't a new thing, and it isn't limited to you.
I mean, yeah? God has been not manifesting himself for as long as he has not existed.
In fact, it's biblical. In chapter 12 of the book of Genesis, God promises Abram that his descendants will become a great nation. This promise, however, is not fulfilled for 13 years.
Yeah, longer than that, actually. That was just the time until he had his first kid. Pin in that. He never actually lived to see that promise fulfilled. He died when his two grandchildren were teenagers. And let's not forget that Abraham didn't really trust God to fulfill that promise. Let's take that pin out of that not actually being his first kid. He tried to shortcut the whole thing by having a kid with Sarah's slave Hagar, which God seemed to have forgotten about when he commanded Abraham to sacrifice his only son Isaac, who he had with Sarah after Abraham and Hagar had Ishmael. Also, I know Cameron will bristle at the idea of taking biblical stuff literally when it obviously doesn't make any sense, but God promised Abraham that his descendants would be as numerous as the stars in the sky. And given that there are approximately 10 to the 24th stars in the observable universe, and there have been a grand total of about 120 billion people to ever live, then if every single human being to ever live was a descendant of Abraham, God's still failing that promise by about 15 orders of magnitude, if I counted my zeros correctly.
By this time, Abram is an old man. Later on in Genesis, Joseph, an obedient and faithful man of God, found himself sold into slavery, wrongly accused of adultery, and thrown into prison.
Slight diversion again, sorry, that's gonna happen a few times in this video. If we look at the Joseph story, this is one of the more obvious places where Exodus tips its hand as to being a compilation of different stories written by multiple authors that were smashed together. In chapter 37, when Joseph is first sold into slavery, his brothers see a caravan of Ishmaelites coming through and decide to sell him to the Ishmaelites. Then out of nowhere, it just mentions a group of Midianite traders passing by. Then it forgets about them again. Then they sell him to the Ishmaelites. Then, once he gets to Egypt, the Midianites sell Joseph to Potiphar. Clearly, this is a spot in the book where two competing traditions existed, one where Joseph was sold to Ishmaelites, and one where he was sold to Midianites. Of course, now that Cameron's Catholic, he's probably a lot more open to interpretational shenanigans. Catholics think that the Bible is inerrant, but they tend to be a lot less tied to literalism in scripture than most of the other denominations. Also, diversion from my diversion here, in the video where Cameron announced his newfound Catholicism, he also mentioned that he runs his channel at a $3,000 a month deficit.
So over the past year or so, we've been operating at a net loss each month. And as of November 2022, this deficit has grown to nearly $3,000 per month.
And I honestly don't have the slightest idea how that is even possible. Running a YouTube channel has such a low overhead. Like, yeah, to do it professionally, there's probably going to be some expenses that the amateur YouTuber won't have, like Adobe's monthly subscription. But the biggest source of overhead is the gear. And once you have that, it can be a long time before you need anything else. Like, honestly, I've been running at a bit of a deficit myself recently, dipping into my savings for things that I've been doing for the channel, like all this lighting stuff that I've gotten for the sake of doing live videos instead of using the Rhino cartoon. But that's temporary, and I'm doing it incrementally so that it won't break the bank. Once I have everything I need for that, I just have it. It's no longer a monthly expense. And on top of that, I pay taxes. Capturing Christianity is a 501c3. Now, maybe he does have legitimate expenses that add up to that amount. Perhaps he has several employees that I'm unaware of. Perhaps he pays everyone that appears on his channel quite generously. But the thing is, I don't know. And he's not telling. What I do know is that in an update video, he announced that Capturing Christianity's income went up by $2,000 in only 2 weeks since announcing that he was running a deficit.
Well, hello there, Cameron here. 2 weeks ago, I announced that Capturing Christianity was having some financial struggles. Our current deficit is $1,000 per month.
So, yeah, I'm not accusing him of anything here. As I said, there are legitimate monthly expenses that YouTubers can have, but given the output that we've seen from Cameron and his organization, I just can't figure out where that amount of money would be going. So, Cameron, if by chance you happen to be watching this, some transparency would be nice. And actually, diversion from my diversion from my diversion, this is a general thing that I've never understood about the tax-exempt charity thing. Secular charities have to be accountable and have completely open financial books, ready for anyone to scrutinize them who cares to do so. but as soon as that charity attaches itself to a religion, then suddenly everything can be kept hidden, allowing pastors of megachurches to live in multi-million dollar mansions tax-free? Why? Why do religious charities get to conceal that information, while secular charities are held to a higher standard? Should the charities that are working in the name of God not be able to meet the highest of standards? Especially if God's real. So, I'm calling on you, Cameron. Be a trailblazer. Be transparent with your finances, and call out Christian churches who resist such transparency. This could only be good for Christianity, as it would weed out the fakers who use Christianity to scam its more vulnerable adherents, leaving the actual ministries run by faithful Christians to do the actual good work. Is that not something that you would want?
He was there so long, the Bible says, he was literally forgotten.
No, that's not how the story goes, like, at all. In fact, while Joseph was in prison, it makes sure to remind us several times that because the Lord was with Joseph, everything that Joseph did was successful, so that the keeper of the prison basically put Joseph in charge of the prison. The only person that forgot about Joseph was Pharaoh's cupbearer, and it wasn't a function of time so much as distraction. He was released from prison and just got so caught up in the moment that he forgot about the guy who interpreted his dream while in prison. It wasn't until Pharaoh started having dreams of his own and calling on all the wise men and magicians of Egypt that the cupbearer's memory was jogged, and he mentioned that, oh yeah, there was this dream-interpreting guy that I met in prison that one time. There's no inkling in that story that Joseph ever felt like God abandoned him. Quite the contrary, God was constantly showing Joseph steadfast love.
And in one of the most astonishing verses in the New Testament, Jesus himself experiences hiddenness on the cross when he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Okay, y'all have already heard me talk about how that verse shows the Gnostic leanings that can be found in the book of Mark, where some early Christians believed that Jesus was just a dude who was inhabited temporarily by the Spirit of God, the Christ, and that's why Jesus called out when Christ left him. But putting that aside, someone leaving you is not the same as someone ignoring you after only indicating their existence through methods that turn out to be perfectly explainable if they just never existed in the first place. Like, Jesus was supposed to be God himself, which, yeah, that doesn't make any sense here, how does one forsake themselves, but again, setting that aside, Jesus spent his life doing things like talking to Satan directly, walking on water, feeding thousands of people with just a handful of food, healing the sick, and all sorts of miraculous stuff like that. If I had those kinds of experiences in my life, and just one day I just didn't feel God's presence, that might be upsetting to me, but that wouldn't cause me to question his existence. But even though Jesus himself supposedly said that his followers would be able to do greater works than what he had done, the opposite actually seems to be true. Nobody since Jesus has quite matched his accomplishments, and as is often pointed out, the prevalence of miracles in society seems to have declined in the approximate proportion to our ability to document miracles. According to Jesus, Christians should be able to heal the sick, and yet, I'd be willing to bet that even Cameron doesn't think that the faith-healing revival meetings by the likes of Peter Popoff or Benny Hinn are legitimate. Why are the big faith healers never legitimate when Jesus said that his followers would have healing powers? This is easily explained in terms of atheism, but if the Bible actually is the inerrant word of God, then there's an awful lot of explaining to do here that just doesn't happen.
Clearly, being a Christian doesn't exclude us from experiencing spiritual dryness.
There's nothing wrong with a little spiritual dryness. After all, the wise sage Ben Shapiro would tell us that spiritual wetness is a sign of disease.
My first concern, as a sympathetic and empathetic human being, my first concern is that these women are describing a serious gynecological condition.
Coming to grips with the biblical nature of hiddenness is a start, but how might a Christian respond intellectually to hiddenness? A good parent wants to develop their relationship with their children as much as they can. They wouldn't let their children think that they were gone, leave them in the dark about what they wanted, or refuse to comfort them in their pain, at least not if they could help it.
Yup. Nothing could ever make me voluntarily hide myself from my children like that and to not be there when they need me. As a limited human, sometimes I do fail at being there for them, but since God is not a limited human, then if his relationship with us is analogous to a parental relationship, he shouldn't fail at it.
Shouldn't we expect the same from God?
No, we shouldn't. We should expect better from God, because God's supposed to be better.
Surprisingly, hippness does seem to promote relationship with God in the long run.
Tell that to all the atheists who were desperate for God to reveal himself to them, as he promised he would in 1 Chronicles 28:9. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But they didn't find him after seeking him. Did he break his promise, or does he just not exist?
Mystics often report a dark night of the soul, in which God's presence is withdrawn from them. But they also report that the dark night eventually ends, and that their relationship with God is made all the stronger for it.
Withholding an important part of a relationship in order to make the other person in the relationship feel more grateful for it when they do get it is some seriously abusive behavior. How come God, who is supposed to be superior to us in every way imaginable, can't seem to get away from engaging in abusive behavior? Shouldn't he be better than that?
They say it causes them to better appreciate their relationship with God, better understand their dependence on God, and it even aids in purifying themselves for deeper union with God.
Yeah, like I said, that sounds abusive as fuck. He withholds a vital part of the relationship for a time so that you can appreciate it more when you have it. This relationship with God is likened to food by Jesus. Man cannot live by bread alone. So to continue that analogy, that would be like me not feeding my kids for a couple days so that when I do finally give them food, they appreciate it more. When God does it, it's amazing and wonderful and loving, and it deepens the relationship. When I do it, Family and Children's Services come and take my kids away for their own protection. And rightly so in that instance.
On the other hand, some non-believers openly claim that if God exists, they wouldn't want a relationship at all, but would instead rebel.
Yeah, a lot of atheists do say that. But that's not the starting position. If you had asked me while I was in the process of losing my faith, I absolutely would have agreed that I wanted a relationship with Jesus. But when you take off the rose-colored glasses of religion, it's pretty easy to recognize that the kind of relationship God wants with us is an abusive one. If anyone were in a marriage with a partner that behaved like God, we would absolutely feel sympathy for that person and be rooting for their escape and wanting to help protect them from their partner. Now, if the God of the Bible were actually demonstrated to exist, I'm not sure that I'd have the courage to actually rebel, knowing what the consequences are. But then we end up with another problem. I would not be capable of feeling genuine love for a being that behaves like the God of the Bible. And so even if I pretend to love him, I'd probably end up condemned to hell anyway for my insincerity. It's not that I'm rebelling for the sake of rebelling, it's that there's literally no way for me to actually want to be in that kind of unhealthy relationship.
It makes sense to think that God might want to remain hidden. If you want to form a healthy relationship with somebody, doing something that causes them to resent and fight you would be counterproductive.
Yeah, no, that's not how it works here. See, in Christian theology, the atheists already resent and fight God because Romans 1:20 says we do. But that's kind of beside the point here, because in a healthy relationship, both people are free to be who they genuinely are without fear of judgment. And that doesn't work for God in either direction, apparently. He's hiding himself because he doesn't want us to get all resentful at him for, well, being a genocidal maniac. But if he reveals himself to me, then at that point, I have to do my best to hide who I am because he is incapable of not passing judgment, apparently, and will judge me quite harshly for not approving of his genocidal tendencies, thus resulting in my being thrown into an eternal torture chamber. So neither of us can be our true selves around the other without judgment, whether he shows himself or not. So by hiding, the only thing he's accomplishing is providing evidence for arguments against his existence.
For as long as someone has this disposition, God's purposes might be better served if he remains distant.
Distant and hidden are not the same thing. He could reveal himself in an unambiguous way and then not try to force the issue. Like, if someone in a relationship says, "I need some space," you don't have to completely disappear from their lives and stay gone forever even after they've said that they've had enough space and would like you to come back. You can just respect that people need space sometimes and give them that space. Now, since I've been talking a lot about abusive relationships, I do just want to make clear that there are often excellent reasons to permanently cut someone out of your life, so I am not saying that if an abusive ex comes back and says they want you back, that you have any obligation whatsoever to actually get back with them. But what I am saying is that God's behavior, even when put in the best possible light by apologists, comes off as manipulative and abusive. And there are healthier ways to go about having that type of relationship, but God is incapable of having healthy relationships. Hell, he couldn't even have a healthy relationship with his own son. He had that guy put to death and tortured. Tortured and then put to death. Because, you know, order of operations is important when you're talking about that.
But what about non-believers that don't fit this particular mold?
Yeah, what about them? Or even believers who are starting to have doubts which could easily be assuaged by God's popping in and saying hi. What about those people?
Christianity has always taught that God wants us to relate to God in community, helping one another grow in that relationship. Through activities like studying scriptures together, working on and thinking through rational arguments, encouraging each other in spiritual disciplines, participating in corporate worship, and setting good moral examples for each other, we can help each other learn more about and grow closer to God.
Well, seeing as how you're Catholic now, I'll just say that when the Catholic Church can come out and offer an unequivocal, no-hedging, no-blame-shifting apology for all the heinous shit that they have done throughout history and are continuing to do, when they sell off their assets to make compensation payments to their living victims and their families, when they stop hoarding valuable historical documents, not letting them be examined by anyone, when they stop condemning the use of contraceptives in a way that has exacerbated the AIDS crisis, and the list goes on. I could just keep on going with their heinous, immoral behavior. When they stop doing these behaviors and start apologizing for them properly, then maybe I can take that claim seriously. Until then, it looks like the biggest pyramid scheme in history, meant only to bring wealth and riches to its highest members.
This responsibility is extremely valuable. Using it correctly helps us form deeper, more meaningful relationships with God and other people.
And such endeavors would be greatly helped if the guy they are all supposed to be studying and or emulating made himself available for study and or emulation.
Unfortunately, we humans often fail in this responsibility. When Christians are intellectually lazy, when they oppress others, when they display bigotry, and when religious leaders manipulate their flocks into believing false things for their own personal gain.
Well, since you brought it up this time, I am once again asking you to be transparent with your ministry's finances in order to avoid the appearance of manipulating your flock for personal gain. Because right now, it looks like you are living large off of fleecing your flock, and are using your conversion to Catholicism as an opportunity to present yourself as struggling financially to a whole new audience in order to solicit donations. But that's the cynical view. That's only going by outside appearances. Unfortunately, though, until you institute a policy of transparency, outside appearances are really all I have to go on. I want to believe better of you, Cameron. I really do. But you're not making it easy.
This places stumbling blocks in the way of others growing closer to God.
Yep, Cameron sure is placing stumbling blocks in the way of others growing closer to God.
Some cases of hiddenness may ultimately be the result of us letting each other down, abusing a kind of freedom which God gave us for good reasons.
Okay, but if we go back to the parenting analogy, I'm not going to fuck off and abandon my kids if they start fighting with each other. What we do to each other should have no impact on God's ability or willingness to reveal himself to us.
Hiddenness, therefore, rather than making us doubt God's existence, should instead inspire us to grow intellectually, spiritually, and morally.
So instead of God's absence being taken as God being absent, we should consider it an opportunity for growth? Are we unable to go through this intellectual, spiritual, and moral growth when God is present? What does this say about God if his presence would hinder us from these kinds of growth?
So that we can help others come to better know and love God.
The better way to come to know and love someone is to, you know, meet them, for them to be present. It's hard to love someone who never so much as introduces themselves to you. And In the Christian God's case, the next step would be for him to apologize and beg our forgiveness for his past behavior as a genocidal maniac. It's hard to love someone who refuses to admit when they were wrong. And unless you think it's possible to morally justify genocide, then God's genocides were wrong. And if you do think it's possible to morally justify genocide, then yeah, I don't want a relationship with you either.
Despite these answers, it could be that some cases of hiddenness nonetheless remain mysterious to us.
To translate that out of Christianese, the fact that God behaves exactly as if he doesn't exist doesn't mean he actually doesn't exist. It just means that he has reasons we don't understand for pretending not to exist. This falls into the category of questions that God could have easily answered for us if he wanted to, but he decided not to for some reason. You know, the kinds of questions that we would expect to not have answers if there was no God.
But perhaps this isn't too surprising. After all, God knows vastly more than we do. Just as it isn't surprising if a chess grandmaster makes moves whose rationale we don't see, perhaps it's not too surprising if God does the same.
Sure, God is supposed to know way more than us, so maybe he has reasons that we just don't understand. But given the fact that churches use belief in God to exert control over people in a way that Cameron here doesn't even approve of, and God doesn't even bother to say, "I don't want those kinds of people to be associated with me," I'm just going to go ahead and say that the most plausible explanation for God's apparent non-existence is his actual non-existence.
Of course, there are limits to this. If the Grandmaster kept losing games, we might wonder if he was really that good after all.
And what would you consider to be the real-world analogy to losing games here? Consistently dwindling church membership? Because while the absolute numbers of Christians are growing, that growth is smaller than the overall population growth, meaning that as an overall proportion of the population, Christianity is shrinking, so that's a lost game. Would the organization that claims to represent the God that they claim is the moral authority keep getting caught up in scandals where their top-level members are found to be behaving immorally count as a loss? Having tens of thousands of internal schisms causing tens of thousands of different denominations of the organization that is supposed to be unified in the following of Jesus be considered a loss? The fact that followers of Jesus are supposed to be able to do greater miracles than any that Jesus did, and yet they can't even rise to the level of turning water into wine without resorting to trickery, does that count as a loss? I don't know, man. Looks like the grandmaster of your analogy just keeps losing games, so I'm left wondering if he's really that good after all.
But the evidence for theism, and the fact that we have plausible explanations for hiddenness in some cases, gives us reason to trust in God's goodness, even when we can see God's purposes only dimly.
The evidence for theism is mediocre at best, and that's if you count logical argumentation itself as a form of evidence. Given that fact, and the fact that these plausible explanations for God's hiddenness don't actually seem all that plausible to me, and the fact that Jesus himself explicitly stated that there would be several abilities that his followers would have that we should be able to observe and test, and none of them seem to actually have these abilities, I'm going to go ahead and say that God appears to be hidden because he does not, in fact, appear to be hidden, he just doesn't exist. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Daniel Jackson, who says, "By that logic, ChatGPT has a brain like a human. It doesn't, therefore God doesn't exist. QED." This is an example of a logical fallacy known as a false analogy. The logic behind the statement is that because ChatGPT is a machine and does not have a brain like a human, it can be inferred that a God does not exist. However, the existence of God is a complex and multifaceted topic that is not dependent on the capabilities of a machine, and so it's not a valid conclusion to draw from this analogy. Additionally, it doesn't relate to the thing. ChatGPT doesn't exist as a physical being like a human. It's a model that runs on a computer which humans have built. It's not a fair comparison between the two. And that was actually ChatGPT's response to that comment. I decided to let it respond for itself. I left out the paragraph at the end about how belief in God is a personal decision and everyone has to weigh the arguments and evidence for themselves, because that was way more hedgy than I usually am, and so I didn't think that would keep you going for as long as just that paragraph would. Thanks for watching! Thanks to Tim Robertson for being my Patreon and sponsorship manager, and special thanks as always to my patrons, who are the reasons I behave as though I don't even exist. If you'd like to make sure that my presence is indiscernible from my absence, you can join us on Patreon for as little as a dollar per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino, or by supporting the channel in one of the other methods that can be found at links.vicerhino.com, which is also where you'll find links to my other projects. If for whatever reason you want to send me stuff, my P.O. Box address is in the description. See you next time! I'm bad at my job. I'm bad at my job. After all, as the wise sage Ben Shapiro would tell us, the spiritual wetness... The wise sage... Why would you scroll up that far? As the wise sage Ben Shapiro would tell us... After all, the wise sage... I can't get wise sage Ben Shapiro out without... I guess that's just not something that... Yeah. The wise sage... Why would you scroll up that far? That's not where I was. Bad teleprompter. Bad. I need employees. Give me $3,000 a month so I can hire a camera operator. I promise I'll pay them $3,000. You know what? As an outtake, if I get like a $3,000 a month patron that actually sticks with it for a bit, I will honestly hire someone for $3,000 a month just to operate my camera like once or twice a week, however often I do it. It's not going to happen. Don't do that. Don't give me that money. I'd have to talk to someone. God.